order. So I'll call the meeting order at 12 o'clock. I'll do a roll call. Once you hear your name, please roger up. So Grant, Dave Course.
Here.
Gaffney Fesco.
Here.
Paul Hinch.
Here.
Felix Reyes or Mayor Passero. Doug Delaney. Brian Thompson.
Here.
Kristen Erbach.
Here.
John Johnson.
Here.
Thomas Gill.
Here.
Tom Patton.
Here.
Paul Robertson. Here this morning. There's Doug.
And Felix joining us.
Felix Reyes.
I'm here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Yep. Dave Perullo. Chuck Roman.
Here.
And Mayor Elliker.
Oh, note, I did have a meeting with New Haven about something else last week. Reminded them that they have.
They're more than welcome to join us.
Yeah. And they noted.
They're an open invitation.
Open invitation. All right. The first order of business is approval of minutes from our December 17th regular meeting of the board.
So moved.
Grant, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. John, any comments, discussions? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anybody? Any abstentions?
Okay. Paul Robertson joined right before me.
Yep. Great. Okay. Public comments. Any members of the public in the room that would like to make a public comment? Please do so. Any members of the public attending on Zoom who would like to make a comment can do so by raising their hand or putting a comment in the chat. If you have dialed on the phone, you can unmute yourself by pressing *6 or raise your hand by pressing *9. So I'll, before I go to the Zoom calls, anybody here in public who would like to, in present, like to make a comment? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Pat Kennedy of New London and Connecticut Pilot Apprentice Applicant. I'd like to urge the Connecticut Port Authority to take note of recent discussions that state representatives have been having with the Connecticut DOT in regards to a possible replacement of the Mohegan Pequot Bridge that spans the Thames River from Montville to Preston. A new enhanced bridge will be greatly needed to support the continued development of tourist destinations in our region, especially with the possibility of the former Norwich State Hospital site. Over the years, there have been several inquiries by mega yacht operators, vessels 200 feet and above, to transit the upper reaches of Thames River to Norwich so they could be in close proximity to the casinos and get better weather protection as the upper Thames is a great hurricane hold. The current height above the water of the Maple Pequot Bridge is 75 feet. Through research, I have discovered that some of these mega yacht vessels can clear and others cannot because their air draft are too great. So it would be wise that if any new bridge design would to move forward to include a height to allow vessels with greater air draft to clear. When the current bridge was built in the 1960s, there was commercial traffic underneath the bridge to the oil terminals in Norwich, including the Norwich State Hospital, but the air drafts were never an issue as they were mostly tug and barge or smaller coastal tankers. Obviously, no one back then would have envisioned two major casinos and the Norwich State Hospital possibly becoming a waterfront resort destination. As far as me personally, I have been hoping for this kind of possibility for many years now, and is a major factor in my efforts to obtain a Connecticut State Pilot's License. Most of these 200-foot-plus mega yachts are foreign flagged and require a Connecticut State Pilot. I made sure when I obtained my federal Thames River endorsements that included the upper reaches of the Thames River. That's Allen's Point to Norwich Harbor. It would be great to see significant vessel transit the Thames River upper reaches again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else in the would like to make public comment that is present? Hey, Jill, do we have anybody on Zoom?
Kevin Blacker, I'd like to make comment.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Blacker.
So in the news yesterday, it was reported that Orsted announced or marked a $1.7 billion impairment. Now, this is your partner down there. It was reported that since 2021, their stock has lost something like 84% of its value. As everybody saw or should have seen, the President Donald Trump enacted day one executive order curbing future offshore wind development, at least temporarily. This is going to have a massive impact on the industry. In case any of you missed the reporting on the $300 million project plan for Brayton Point just being outright canceled and walking away, these are all very clear signs that there are gigantic problems coming in the offshore wind sector. So offshore wind is going to fail, and the port will be returned. Now, this port is going to be returned to you and to the public with the freight rail ripped up, 7 acres of deep water, which could have accommodated ships and barges and conventional cargo, filled in, warehouses torn down, administration building torn down, and we're going to have a very specialized port. This is all going to be under the control of your new executive director, which you took great time finding and hiring a person that lacks maritime experience. He seems like he's going to be a great babysitter. After how many years, is that a quality that he's going to, that's what Ulysses Haymond was. He was a good babysitter. And so it's not a strong position. I hope that the press and any legislator that listens to anything that this board puts out, because there's going to be this great narrative that you're going to be able to handle conventional cargo there, that it's strong and it's improved. The place is weakened and it's very specialized and it's much less, usable for conventional cargo, which is what it should have always served. So going forward, what should happen is State Pier should be returned to the DOT, where it should be advised by like a three-person advisory council of people that actually have maritime experience, people like Dave Perillo. You guys should outright throw David Corus and John Johnson off the board as a means of restoring some semblance of public trust and respect. And the Port Authority should continue as an organization focus simply on small harbors, as you guys have proved over and over and over your incompetence, your stupidity, your inability to manage the region and one of the state's greatest assets. I look forward to this ethics training, which ought to be about like the greatest hits of the Port Authority, and hopefully they'll touch on all the past actions of Scott Bates and Andrew Levine and Bonnie Riemschneider, Henry Wan, and Seabury, because it was those ethical lapses and that stupidity that put the state in the position that we're in now that we'll all have to pay for, going forward. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Any other members of the public on Zoom that would like to make a comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the next item on the agenda, the Finance Committee update. So let's co-chairs Mr. Corus and Mr. Patton. I think, David, you're going to take over there.
Sure, Tom, unless you want to.
It's all yours, David.
So Finance Committee met this morning at 10 o'clock. We had a great discussion and I think full attendance. We advanced three items recommended for the board's full consideration. And so those three items are before you. There is our quarterly OFA report, and we can go through these in detail, a series of budget modifications, as well as our annual financial report. So I think, Paul, do you want me to just kind of summarize each as we go, and then you
manage
the votes for each year? Okay, so first is the quarterly OFA report. You should all be pretty familiar with this at this point, as we do this every quarter. It monitors the fund status of all of our various accounts. It covers general operations. It covers the DOT core appropriation. It covers core bond funds, and it covers the New London State Pier project. It's meant to be a concise summary of revenue and expenditures within each fund to date, with a highlight of the last quarter's activities. It was recommended for approval by the board from the committee.
So, consideration and approval of a resolution authorizing submission of the fiscal year 2025 quarter two quarterly financial report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis. Resolve that the Board of Directors authorize submission of the fiscal year 2025 quarter two quarterly financial report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis as required by Section 1TAC 123 Bravo of the Connecticut General Statutes as recommended by the Finance Committee at its meeting held on January 21, 2025, in the form attached as exhibit to agenda item 4 alpha.
So
I have a second.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, please indicate with your vote with an aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? So moved. All right, budget modifications.
Okay, so then you'll all recall our operating procedures call for the reevaluation of our budget after the end of the second quarter, and I think at the end of the third quarter, to make sure that any budget items or lines that are anticipated to be in deficit are rectified by shifting funds from items that are or lines that are expected to be in surplus to those lines. So what you see here as recommended for approval by the Finance Committee are a series of budget reallocations. I'll pay attention to just a few and can certainly answer questions to any of them, but the major shifts are from predominantly three columns: salary, benefits, and external legal fees. Salary and benefits are due to the fact that we had some position vacancies and some lag resources there while they're being filled, and the legal fee external is due to the fact that the need for external legal expenses related to external factors, which are things like, FOIA requests, investigations, et cetera, thankfully have not been to the level that we had budgeted for. So we're predominantly shifting away from those three line items, and most of the funds are being shifted to contractual services. And this is to cover a recently approved expense that came through the board, which was for training related to longshoreman activity at State Pier. There are some other minor things, can certainly answer questions about any of them, but those are the three big sending categories and the one predominant receiving category.
So I'll introduce the item, consideration and approval of the resolution authorizing the acceptance and adoption of fiscal year 2025 annual operating budget modifications. Be it resolved that in accordance with section 4 of the authority's operating procedures, in order to prevent any line item of the authority's annual operating budget from containing or being projected to contain a deficit, the board hereby accepts the following modifications to the fiscal year 2025 budget, as recommended by the Finance Committee at the meeting held on January 21, 2025, in the form attached as exhibit to agenda item 4, Bravo.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Very well, motion carries.
And then finally, there's a recommendation from the Finance Committee to approve for submission the 2024 fiscal annual financial report. And so this is a report that we are statutorily required to do annually. So you've seen this multiple times before. It has our outside audit for that fiscal year as an attachment. And it is basically a summary of our major expenditures with narrative consolidating a description of our activities within that fiscal year on our major projects. It talks about State Pier, it talks about SHIP program, it talks about Pier 7, it talks about dredging, and it does so in a way that should be easily digestible and informative to both the General Assembly, who requires it, as well as the general public.
Okay, I'll introduce the item: consideration and approval of a resolution authorizing the submission of the fiscal year 2024 annual financial report pursuant to TAC 123 alpha of the Connecticut state statutes. Be it resolved that the executive director be and hereby is authorized, empowered, and directed for and on behalf of the Connecticut Port Authority to submit the annual report responsive to Connecticut General Statutes Section 1TAC 123 Alpha to the governor and the auditors of public accounts as recommended by the Finance Committee at its meeting held on January 21, 2025, and as further described in the exhibit to agenda item 4 Charlie, and to deliver any and all other reasonable and necessary documents in furtherance thereof.
Second.
Any discussion? I would like to point out that Jill and Faye did an awesome job of putting this together. It is an onerous report to do, and I really appreciate all their efforts in that. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the resolution passes. Okay, next item, Human Resource Committee update. You ran the meeting today, so I'll let you go ahead, John. Sure.
A very brief meeting. Talked with our new executive director about the Maritime Development Manager position. And we've already listed the job with our agency down in Florida, and we'll soon start to have resumes will be looked at by staff here before we all get together as a committee. I think that's just about all we had going.
Any questions by any members of the board? I would point out, and I think just to mention hiring of a new
Maritime Development.
Those job postings are posted on a couple of different websites and so forth. You want to comment on that just real quick?
Yeah, you can find links to the posting on Connecticut Port Authority's website, and that'll take you to Flagship's website, who is the search agent. We've shared that with Eastern Connecticut Chamber of Commerce and several other places, and we've got it out on LinkedIn.
You know, one thing I meant to ask, are we going to be charged to the next search?
No, because Eric left Gratis before the 180 days. So, yep. Okay, any other questions for John? All right. Moving up to item number 6, executive director update. Mike.
Good afternoon. So, it's good to be here today. This is week 4 for me. I don't think there's a holiday every other week for the rest of the year, but so far I've gotten through 2 holidays. My initial plans to meet with the staff have gone well. Jill and Faye and Laurie do an excellent job in their roles and have done a great job at providing transparency, affording us the opportunity to meet, providing information to all the stakeholders, and doing all the normal business associated with the things that the Port Authority does in the absence of an executive director and a maritime development manager. So appreciate their efforts. And it was good to walk in here and find very competent staff to join the team of and to work with going forward. So thank you for that great start. The priority is to hire the harbor development manager. So we will be working through that. And based on what the candidate pool looks like over the next week or so, I'll be able to update the board on the plans to make a hire there. Also, I have plans to meet with board members themselves. I think given the holiday period and the start at the end of the year, good progresses have been made. We'll schedule more meetings with more directors over the course of time here. I also had an opportunity to tour the state pier with Paul Whitescarver. and have visits to the New Haven and Bridgeport deepwater ports in the coming weeks, probably in the month of February. But another priority is to complete and close out the project at the State Pier, and we'll discuss that further in executive session coming up here. Had the opportunity to engage with the Harbor Pilot Commission. They meet monthly. First meeting I attended was in January. I also had a chance to meet with the chairman of the Pilot Commission, Bill Gash, last week. And one action I've taken is to designate Chairman Whitescarver as my designee to fill the role on the Pilot Commission. He has great experience in this area and expressed an interest in staying involved. So he will be my designee on that board. I will also attend the meetings and continue to be engaged with the Pilot Commission. Pilots did raise concerns with water depth, and I've heard from several people about dredging in the state. Federal dredging is getting accomplished on a specified schedule, but there's a lot more dredging that needs to be done locally and across the coastline. And so another priority is to help manage the dredging. Most of the impediments to dredging have to do with permitting and funding. I think that's a place where we can help manage what the footprint looks like and advance things going forward. The next round of Small Harbor Improvement Program is going to be upon us soon. The Bond Commission has not approved the last round. That's scheduled for sometime in, is it February?
Likely
in February. We do want to make sure that that program lives on past some statutes would have it end in 2026. But I'd like to improve the timing of the grant applications and award process and the coordination with the Bond Commission. There's some eligibility questions about a grant that we approved for the town of Guilford that has Senator Cohen on the Transportation Committee attention. She'd like to look at the legislation and see what she can do to help out with that. And then the question of access to the program has been raised by New London. There's a lot of areas in municipalities that have deepwater ports that are not the deepwater port itself that could benefit from Small Harbor Improvement Program that are exempt from the way we make those awards because they are deepwater ports. And maybe we could do something to engage the local community there.
Sorry, Mike. On that note, in terms of the deepwater ports, that, you know, other projects other than the, you know, that they don't have eligibility. That's not a way that we administer, right? That's a legislative eligibility determination, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so the way forward if the legislature wanted to do something would be, you know, with our help and the community's help to change that legislative, that statutory eligibility, right?
Yes, okay. That is an option. And I did make that known to Senator Cohen last time we spoke.
All right, thanks.
Welcome. I've been engaged in a review of contracts, MOUs, and other agreements. We are in the middle of the Clean Ports grant that we got for shore power at the State Pier. We have an RFP out for communications and marketing that I have reviewed the proposals, as has David Corris and Paul Whitescarver, and we will get together and make a determination on the path going forward there. CT Innovations handles our human resources needs. They did a great job onboarding me and making sure that everything you need to do when you join a company is taken care of, including training requirements, payroll, health benefits, anything else I needed for approval of finances here and timekeeping. So they do a great job for us with that. And our staff size doesn't make it necessary to have a separate HR branch of our own. So I really appreciate that level of communication at the state level. Also contracts for State Pier Project, Harbor Development Agreement. I'm reviewing the value of our involvement in all of our associations. American Association of Port Authorities, North American Port Authority Association, Connecticut Maritime Trades Association. Some of them are quite pricey, and want to see who, what where we have overlap and what we can do about that. We had a contract for the trailer at the State Pier, which we provide internet and electricity and waste services for. We'll be canceling that contract because there's less of a need for that now. And then I'm looking forward to getting some recommendations for the next steps at Pier 7 that we're engaged with. Have had some engagement with the Transportation Committee co-chair, Senator Cohen. I did attend Thursday night's part of the boat show at the Mohegan Sun. That's the Hartford Boat Show, sponsored by the Connecticut Maritime Trades Association. I think there's future opportunities for us to be there as a vendor to hear from people and to make our presence known, rather than have us go around and talk to individuals at different booths. Was able to tour Thayer Mann, very, very good partner in Groton, who does a lot of work with the wind organizations. Got to a Connecticut Wind Collaborative meeting, Connecticut Pilots Commission meeting. Went to an event in Hartford that CBIA sponsored. We did join as a member, and CBI is going to come down and talk to us next week about expanding Port Authority's footprint in the state. We do participate in the Regional Safety Committee held in at the Waterford Police Department. And I did get an opportunity to talk to Tucker Braddock and tour the next deep water port in Connecticut, the Norwich Harbor. And I do share some opinions about the bridge. When I was on the Water Authority and we were looking at moving water throughout the state, the bridge couldn't support a larger water line. So those are the types of things that need to be thought of in advance before large amounts of money are spent and we don't get everything we wanted to. I have plans to meet with several other senators that have an interest in the Port Authority. Many local leaders. North American Port Association meeting is in June this year. I will be at CMA Shipping in April in Stamford. I do have an interest in seeing where our small harbor improvement money was already spent or planned to be spent to date and look for opportunities to expand on that. And then GAFNI has offered to get us some insights on use of rail. If a port doesn't have a rail, it's not a port. Is that what you're saying?
My opinion.
Yeah, that's right. Do have some actions coming into view. Development of next year's budget will be some work we'll be doing here in the coming weeks. Expansion of operations at the State Pier, gateway through the Harbor Development Agreements, got a responsibility to market and bring more business into the pier. So we will certainly be working on that with them. And, you know, if there's a shift in what we do out of the State Pier, we'll have to manage that. And I would like some help with the addition of maritime experience on the board of directors, given that we do have 5 vacancies. There's opportunities for that. So as I've talked to all the board members, I've made them known, made that known, and perhaps we can get some recommendations to the appointing authorities at the state legislature and the governor to increase our board knowledge and expertise on the maritime coastline. I also look for a future opportunity to develop some economic development tools right out of the Connecticut Port Authority itself. We do have SHIP and we want to keep that going. We also have an income stream that I think we can use to help the community on the coast. Sector has a similar program like RISE, which is sponsored through DECD, who also has a boost fund and lots of opportunities through the Small Business Administration. So all this is in support of our mission to grow the maritime economy in the state of Connecticut, and look forward to continuing in that role. It's been great so far. Any questions? That was the first 3 weeks. sorry to be so lengthy.
Nope, appreciate it. Okay, item number 7. Given that we're at the tail end of the State Pier with Kiewit and ACOM, I am going to certify that the public interest in the disclosure of the discussion of the Connecticut State Peer Closeout actions involving the construction manager at risk is outweighed by public interest and the confidentiality of the same. And I resolve that pursuant to Section 1, TAC 121, Bravo 4 of the General Statutes of Connecticut, by a two-thirds vote for the members of the Board of Directors present and voting, the board hereby approves to enter into executive session for the purpose of discussing the Connecticut State Fair closeout actions involving the construction manager at risk.
Second.
Any discussion before we go in?
Who else are you inviting in?
I'm going to invite the executive director, Jill, and Marlon Peterson from ACOM. And Faye, if you're around, I'd like for you to stick around for that too. All those in favor of going into executive session?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, I'll take a vote. Or no, we already did that. For the public attendees, for those in the room, we will ask that you step out and we'll let you know when we have come back out of executive session. For members of the public on Zoom, Jill will place you in the waiting room and we'll bring you back into the meeting once we are out of executive session. Yeah, this is it. Let me know when you're ready, Jill. Make sure to keep Marlon in there.
Looks good.
Okay. So, Marlon,
Hey, Paul, I've got a hard stop at 1:30, so I'll just drop off.
Okay. As long as we make sure we have one other item to vote on. So, if you could give us like 2 seconds, like 5 minutes, could we do that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm good until 1:30.
Okay, so we have NOAA funding agreement renewal, introduction of the item, consideration and approval of a resolution authorizing the executive director to enter into an amendment to that certain reimbursable agreement with the U.S. Department of Commerce and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Ocean Service Center for Operational Oceanographic Products and Services. Be it resolved that the chairman of the board of directors is authorized, empowered, and directed for and on behalf of the authority to execute and deliver an amendment to that certain reimbursable agreement with an effective date of March 17, 2020, by and in between the authority and the U.S. Department of Commerce and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Ocean Service Center of Operational Oceanographic Products and Services, as described in the form attached hereto as the exhibit to agenda item 8, and to take such reasonable and necessary actions as are reasonably required in furtherance thereof.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? That said, the resolution passes. Okay, item 9 is Office of State Ethics in Person Training. I want to introduce Mr. Lindowski. Yes. And Mrs. Clark. And while you're talking, I'm going to use the facilities real quick.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, Sarah will connect her.
Yep.
PowerPoint.
I'm going to share. Yeah, excuse me. I just attended the training in August. Should I still be here for this?
I apologize. I'm the person who would be conducting the training, and this is the first time I've come to the Port Authority. I did one for the staff So she this one?
Not at the Port Authority. She attended it at a different entity.
Okay.
I was appointed by the governor to serve on the Port Authority in August, and then during that time frame, I was informed that I needed to take the ethics class and pass, which I did online. Oh.
The online one. This is an updated version, and it's going to take 20 minutes.
Okay.
So we've created it specifically for the Port Authority. I think it would be worthwhile,
sure.
But it's completely up to you.
I do it for the Office of Policy Management. But,
did we do eight or did we skip eight?
Just want to note certain provisions of the code apply to the
exactly.
For example, a state employee or.
Different context. Yeah, members of course I pop and accept different. Yeah, very, very good point.
Well, is there a time limit for public?
Are they still on? Well, there should be a 3-minute time limit. That's what I read.
Are we still on?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, some boards have a time limit. Some boards make sure that the comments are directly relevant to the content of that day's meeting.
So I need to ask this question for Sarah or Mr. Lewandowski. So anybody that has already done ethics training, did you guys already answer?
Peter had a really good point.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to note that certain provisions of the code apply differently to board members of quasi-publics.
Okay.
So I will highlight these. So in your position here, I would recommend, and this is an abridged version for boards, understanding very well that you have a lengthy meeting.
Awesome.
The only thing that's not working is my, it is. Excellent. Okay. We're plugged in. Yes, we are. So being cognizant of your time, and thank you for having us during your meeting. I'm Sarah Clark, and I'm joined by our Executive Director, Peter Lewandowski, to provide you with an overview of the Code of Ethics. So today we're going to go over the Code of Ethics that pertains to state officials, state employees, and also the Codes of Ethics in Connecticut pertain to lobbyists and contractors. We're going to talk about 6 subsections, and each one will be wrapped up by a scenario that's tailored for the Port Authority to demonstrate how this would work in real life. If you, the number one takeaway from this presentation is to always ask advice. We're here for you to assist you in your prospective decision making. You can get a hold of us at the main email box. You can contact us directly. You also have Viola Haynes as your ethics liaison here, and she can serve as a liaison between you and our office, or you can contact us directly. But like other state agencies, you also have an ethics policy that goes beyond that of the state code, but today we're gonna focus on the state code and how it would pertain to a quasi-public agency and the board. So the overarching principle when it comes to the Code of Ethics, and this is gonna be touched on in all the other subsections, is the use of your state position. So if you think of it as a lane on a highway with a solid line on either side, you're not going to meander between your state job and your private life. So you're not going to use your state position for your own financial gain, the financial gain of your family, which is defined as your spouse, child, spouse, parent, or sibling, or the financial gain of your associated business. Peter, if you don't mind.
Sure. So associated businesses, we're talking about any entities with which you have some financial connection. It could be both for-profit or non-for-profit entity, but the assumption is that for a business to be associated, you are either a partner, a director, an officer, an owner of more than 5% of stock of that business for it to be an associated business. If, and this is a very important distinction, many of us are engaged in other community religious associations and so on. We may serve on various boards, community boards, purely in kind of purely voluntary capacity. You can take official action for any entities from which you do not derive financial benefit. Okay, so that's the key distinction. So if you're on the board of your church or another community association, that's not an associated business. It's only for profit, or I mean, entities from which you have some financial connection.
So for a scenario, in your private employment, you provide financial investment consultancy to private clients. You plan to launch a new interactive website and increase your social media presence. When promoting your services online, can you include the fact that you're connected with the Port Authority? And the important distinction is here, not in your promotional narrative. You can include it in your bio. It's part of who you are in your professional experience on your LinkedIn page, your CV. That's perfectly fine, but you're not going to continually bring up the Port Authority in your advertising materials. So when we're talking about gifts, this would be anything that you receive of value that's directly or personally received, that's unless you're providing equal or greater consideration. So there's some sort of market transaction happening. So there are restricted and non-restricted donors, and restricted donors are registered lobbyists, those who are regulated by seeking to do business or currently doing business with the Port Authority, or those on the Department of Administrative Services pre-qualified vendor or contractor list. For these cases, gifts from these restricted donors are prohibited unless they're provided under a gift exception, which we'll go over. And there are 19 total. The four most common are token items. So, you know, the little things that would have their name on it. So stress balls and basic ceramic mugs, baseball hats, things like that. Those token items you can receive up to $10 worth in value per item, up to $50 worth of value from a source per year. For food or beverage, the restricted donor has to be present with you when you're consuming said food or beverage, and you can receive up to $50 worth of food or beverage from that source per year. So if you're working with a contractor, every member of that firm can't take you out for lunch. It's $50 worth period from the whole firm. You can cover the difference. So you can pay it down. So that way you're only receiving the $50, but that's the limit. For rebates or discounts, companies like Verizon Wireless are registered client lobbyists in the state of Connecticut, and they offer a government employee discount. It's not a really good one, but since it's all available to all of us, we're all able to avail ourselves of that discount. It's not singling you out for your position here at the Port Authority. And ceremonial plaques, different organizations or people you work with might be recognizing you for an achievement or an anniversary or, you know, things that are upon your retirement. That plaque can be worth up to $100 from that restricted donor. And for conferences, you might either be attending as a keynote speaker, so you're an active participant, or a panelist, or passively as an audience member to bring knowledge home to put to use here in Connecticut. You can receive travel, lodging, meals, or related expenses as long as they're not lavish. So what would the state pay for? So you're not going to be receiving first class travel or penthouse suites in the hotel. Likewise, you can't receive any sort of compensation, no fees or honoraria for your participation, or any entertainment on the house. So if everyone's going to a basketball game or concert afterwards, you can go, but you do need to purchase your own ticket. In certain instances, when the conference is out of state and not being sponsored by other states' government entity or a federal entity, or the however the associations would work that would make it another government entity, you may need to disclose what you've received. Again, but it's in limited circumstances. Please feel free to call us and we can help you navigate.
And just one note about there may be, you know, Connecticut may belong to an association of other states, of maritime states, for example. So if that association of member states hosts a conference and sponsors the conference, you may partake in it without disclosing
separately.
Yeah. So again, you still have to adhere to these rules, but again, the disclosure would not be required.
So there very well may come a point where you do receive a gift that's prohibited, but do you have ways to fix this? One is you can refuse or return the gift that doesn't meet any applicable gift exception, or you can make that gift a gift to the state and turn it over to the agency for use in the office. You can donate it to a charity, or you can pay the donor fair market value for that gift, but all of these need to be happening within 30 days of receipt of that gift. So for a scenario, your longtime friend gets hired by a government relations department of a Fortune 500 company. The company is a registered client lobbyist in Connecticut. You're going out to dinner and she wants to pay for it. Can your friend pay for your dinner? So there is a responsibility on us as, you know, state public officials and state employees that we need to ask a few questions. One, is your friend paying for dinner, or ultimately is the company? If the company's paying for dinner, then you've got that $50 limit, which you can pay down to then make it appropriate, but still you can only accept up to 50 if the company's paying for it. If your friend is personally paying for it, is she a lobbyist? That doesn't necessarily mean she has to be just because she works in the government relations department. So if she's paying personally and she is a non-lobbyist, you can receive any and all of the dinner that she's providing you. But if she herself is a registered lobbyist, then you're still held to that $50 limit as far as what you can receive.
Even, so that's actually a distinction I wasn't aware of. So even though they are the employee of a restricted entity, if they're paying for it themselves because you have some other personal relationship,
right.
It, then they're not beholden to the restriction of
if they are not also a lobbyist.
Registered lobbyist.
Correct.
Okay. That's actually important, because like I do think the more you read it, and I've obviously read this like a gazillion times, but like you do, you know, I think rightfully you start to question every interaction that you have, right?
Right.
You start to you I think appropriately look through this filter on all your engagements, and there are a lot of people that you may know from different situations that may have peripheral overlaps.
Right.
And I was never really clear on that distinction, that as long as it's them as a personal, like, you know, you go over your friend's house and they're hosting a barbecue or whatever.
Right.
They may work for a company, but as long as it's them, they're personal, they're not an independent, you know, you don't need to, you
right.
don't need to give them a $20 bill to make sure that the barbecue at their house is
yeah, not. You need to itemize groceries.
Yeah, right, exactly.
No, and that's where, but sadly on the other side of things, you may also have long-standing friendships with people, and the minute they become a lobbyist,
be totally
that
true.
Erases the
yes.
entire preceding
yes.
friendship.
Yes.
Now they are always a lobbyist,
yeah, no
and that's
what.
Always a
yeah.
limit that you're going to have to
yeah.
adhere to.
Yeah.
So they all come with a big L on their head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. So,
I mean, well,
yeah, potlucks are recommended. You
yeah.
bring your own dish.
Yeah.
And,
so it's a burgundy and pink badge, but yes.
Yeah,
so
you
they
get
have.
Out of hosting barbecues forever.
This is true. There's
a lobbyist. No one can come.
So when it comes to conflicts of interest, we're going to talk quickly about them. There's substantial conflicts and potential conflicts. And when there's a substantial conflict of interest, this is regarding you and your official action here at the Port Authority. When there's reason to believe or expect that you, your spouse, dependent child, or associated business would obtain a direct monetary gain or suffer direct monetary loss by reason of your official activity in a way that's distinctly different from others in the same profession or group. So for staff, this requires you to recuse yourself by giving a written statement, so an email. And for board, it's just recusal from the matter. And that's something that needs to happen on the public record.
Yes. So in the case of board members, you obviously would have to recuse yourself on the record of this proceeding. So recusals under substantial conflicts are required. Also, key thing to remember, there has to be a distinction. You have to be treated in some distinct fashion for a conflict to appear before you. You may be involved in various matters where your decision making applies to the entire group of people, maybe an entire sector, an entire area of the state. In the case of Port Authority, you deal with harbors and so on. So it has to be very distinct. You have to be treated in a distinct fashion, singularly, or your immediate family members and associated businesses.
And that line, just if I could ask one question about that line, because again, I've thought about this a lot too. I mean, if it benefits the entirety of a municipality that you happen to be a taxpayer in, that's
Absolutely. There's no substantial conflict whatsoever. No, not none. You could actually take official action in that, you know, period.
That's your job.
Yeah. And you're a resident of that municipality that will benefit.
Listen, I mean, I'll be honest, when I was deputy commissioner, there is typically practice to avoid, to recuse yourself from actions within your home municipality. And I never really understood that because it didn't seem to be a direct nexus enough.
How long put the statute of limitations?
and actually, you know, it has to be a broad group of folks. Yeah. So we're talking about all residents.
Right.
You know, if it's just one neighborhood or let's say one street only select members of the municipality are affected, that's different.
Yeah. Right. So I guess, there could be a reason to just do the blanket recusal because a project might arise that does have a substantial conflict and then you would have to be cognizant of it. So it's kind of a way to just avoid even having to consider that.
But that's a standard that you're holding yourself to that's above the letter of the
code. Yeah, understood.
So for potential conflicts of interest, it's a little bit broader. So now we're dealing with a bigger network of your family. You, your spouse, your parent, your sibling, your child's spouse or associated business, and just a reasonable expectation that the financial impact is going to happen, again, in a way for you that, or this network that's distinctly different than a substantial segment of the public. Same procedures for staff, recusal via written statement, and for the board, either to recuse yourself or you need to state on the record why you can still vote on this matter and it's not a conflict.
So other potentials, you have that option, recusal or still acting, but you have to state on the record why you're acting and this benefits the public. Yes.
I have a scenario. So I'm with a nonprofit organization. When we are reviewing contracts here, say I have a contract with somebody that we're reviewing here, then I need to recuse myself or only when you vote?
So if
so, do you understand what I'm saying?
So I'm assuming the nonprofit will benefit.
So I'll give you a real life example. So we have a PR agency,
mm-hmm.
Quinn and Harry for mm-hmm. Connecticut Wind Collaborative. I don't know which agencies the board is reviewing right now. There's a subgroup.
Mm-hmm.
If Quinn and Harry is the one that is going to be voted on, wouldn't I recuse myself because I have a personal contract with them?
It's not a personal contract. You don't.
Not a personal, but because we have a contract with them.
But the PR fine. Company, you're not. You don't have a financial nexus here.
That, but
you only have a contractual relationship that is the nonprofit.
I understand
has
that, but it wouldn't be misconstrued as a bias because they're already.
Well, I mean that's an appearance.
Some people. I have been in situations where people have recused in that condition, but I don't see why. The fact that you happen to be the client of a firm that you have absolutely no financial stake in and that you might become through your action of this board a client of them in a different context. That's
I think we want to know whether you like them or not.
Yeah.
You know, you're not gaining financially. So mm-hmm. we would value it. Probably
it sounds one way when you say public relations firm, it would sound completely different if you said audit firm. And I've been in lots of environments where we're deciding on an auditor for an organization, and I've mm-hmm. used that firm somewhere else
mm-hmm.
and had an opinion about mm-hmm. their work product.
Not unless they're giving you a kickback for folks that you recommend them to, right?
Yeah,
then,
exactly. You would have to have some financial stake in that for you to have that conflict
mm-hmm.
Here because it's a client issue mm-hmm. and you do not derive any personal financial gain or any of your mm-hmm. family members or businesses.
Then, no, I just didn't know if it looked like doing favors type
well,
thing.
Well, and we'll talk about the next slide.
Obviously
will,
not profiting from it, but doing favors.
But right. you did bring up one question that I thought we'd hear the answer to. And when you said recusal or just from the vote, when you recuse yourself, do you
whole
not
process.
Comment at all
yeah.
on any aspect of?
Yeah. Whole process.
The whole process.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's recommended actually in the process if your colleagues are voting on a matter in which you're conflicted, I think the best thing to do is to leave the room. And so this way, your presence, we've issued opinions where, you know, a board member's presence may, even if they are silent, their presence may have a role. So I think in those cases, it's better to just simply walk out, you'll be called back when, you know, the board is done.
So your spouse is a developer and wants to obtain a contract from the Port Authority. Can you utilize your connections to cut through the red tape and get the application through the process expeditiously? And here, this is, some of them are gray areas. This is a very clear no.
Less gray.
And then when it comes to appearances of a conflict, we at the Office of State Ethics will absolutely alert you to a concern about appearances, but we can't advise you to or not to act on appearances alone. So we would encourage you to use your judgment and discretion. If this is going to appear on the front page of the Hartford Current or the Day, is that, how's that going to look for the Port Authority, and how's that going to look for you personally? This is a higher bar than what we're able to adjudicate.
So when we're talking about strictly about appearances, there's no legal obligation for you to abstain. It's really your judgment call. You know, how thick is your skin to withstand public scrutiny and so on? But again, in terms of the code of ethics, it would not be a violation for you to take official action if it's exclusively an appearance issue.
When it comes to outside employment, and this is pertaining obviously to the staff side of things, your outside employment can't impair your independence of judgment. You can't disclose confidential information, nor can you use your state position, as we mentioned in the beginning, for the benefit of your outside employment, so your associated business, if you will. So in addition to your state employment, you engage in a part-time law practice where most of your legal work is focused on real estate closings. You're thinking of joining a larger firm as counsel so you don't have to deal with the administrative aspects of law practice. The firm represents various business clients who have matters before the siting counsel in DEEP. Can you join the law firm? So in this case, the answer would be no, because there's bars from you being able to represent people for compensation when they're also doing things with these state agencies. This again would be it's for your staff only, not the board members.
And this, as Sarah pointed out, this is important. This is where the distinctions come up. This does not apply to quasi-public board members. Okay, it's only to their staff. Full-time staff members would be subject to this restriction.
And then when it comes to state contracting, there are some prohibitions, and we'll talk about the process. So if a quasi-public agency board exercises control over the contract subject matter, board members may not contract with the quasi-public agency unless that contract process is open and public. And there's also a complete prohibition for the agency's executive head to contract with the agency.
So just to be clear, that says that a board member's affiliated business can apply to contract with the Port Authority. They would obviously recuse themselves from that,
from
reviewing
process,
that process. But as long as it's a publicly accessible RFP, they're not precluded from competing.
Exactly, exactly. So as long as it's an open and public process,
yes,
it's perfectly fine. Yeah.
So as a scenario, the Port Authority is looking to clean up the entrance to the state pier and wants to contract with a landscaping company. Since this is a small cosmetic change, the board's decided to use a sole source contract to complete the work. Can a startup lawn company, of which you are a partner, receive the contract? And here you're shaking your head, but the board persons can't, because it's sole source.
Right, sole source.
So if it was RFP'd, then that's okay.
That's fine.
And the staff person cannot.
Well, no, the staff persons, it's interesting. Under the current law, staff people could participate in the sole source contract. Board members could not. So it would have to be an open and public for board members to their firms to partake in this contract. Now, with respect to staff members, let's say you have a staff member who wants to apply for this contract, it's a sole source contract, they cannot be involved in the process of contracting process, that is, recommending, preparing, recommending, for example, companies, if it's just one, if it's a sole source, they would have to abstain because it would trigger the conflicts.
Right.
Wait, hold on. Say that last part one more time.
So the last part, so if you have a staff member, I'm not talking about board members, but if staff member wants to, if they had a firm and let's say the board decided to pursue a sole source contract with a staff member here, they could do it, but that staff member has to hands off from the process.
On the inside.
Right, the documentation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Why
exactly.
Sole source was justified, et cetera.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It says the appearance that will.
Absolutely, yeah. And whereas board members, so source contracts would not apply.
Ever.
It has to be open and public. Yeah.
So following your service to the Port Authority, there are a few lifetimes.
Sorry, sure. And that prohibition, I presume, that prohibition also extends to the same immediate family members that are included in the...
Oh, the open and public process?
The prohibition on sole source. Like, I presume that we could also not sole source with a board member's...
Correct. Right. Yeah. So if you have an associated business,
yes.
Plus let's say your spouse,
yes.
is an owner or partner of a business that
same group exactly. of people that the other prohibitions correspond to.
Correct.
Spouses, kids.
Yep.
So following your service at the Port Authority, there are some lifetime and 1 year bans. For lifetime bans, you cannot disclose confidential information, which is defined in statute. So if you need to consult that, and also there's a ban on representation concerning matters in which the public official or state employee participated. So it's called side switching. You're not able to be representing that same matter on the outside that you were working actively on the inside.
And this is very narrow in this application. So it has to have specific, this applies to specific contracts, specific grants. It's not a prohibition on employment. It's just a prohibition on representing the private party in a matter in which you were intimately, personally involved. And so if there's a contract extension, you just have to tell them, hands off. Someone else has to represent that company. And you have to tell them, no, I cannot handle this because I, while at the Port Authority, was intimately involved in that matter. So,
but if you... let's say a board member joins a firm that the Port Authority has a contract with. They can't work on that contract.
Correct.
They can't be on a contract extension or negotiate right anything building off of that contract, poison fruit. But if then a subsequent RFP were to come out from the Port Authority, they could be involved in the response.
Correct.
Okay.
If it's a separate new contract, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is a site switching regarding past contracts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the 1 year ban, they can't do that for the first year that they So there's a cooling off period for the first year following your service that you can't represent anybody else for compensation before your agency.
And so how does that dovetail? I mean, the prior thing, it's kind of ironic, right? Like theoretically my landscaping company could compete in an RFP tomorrow for $100,000 grant for Port Authority landscaping. And I'd be able to do that because it wasn't sole source. It was through a competitive process. But if I leave, I wouldn't be able to compete in that same RFP for a year because it's over 50.
If you are involved, is this doing business? If you were the only person, you were the sole owner of the company, yes, that's problematic because you would have to represent your company before your former employer or before your former entity.
I just mean because it says contracts. I just mean the contract part, like, because it's so blanket, like it could be the result of an RFP.
Yes, but it's if for example, so if you are an owner of a business,
yeah.
There's a number of partners. Nothing prohibits your business from contracting with with Port Authority immediately upon you departing this body. Someone else, your fellow partners, could be you yourself.
Understood.
Individually are prohibited from picking up the phone.
Understood.
Contacting.
Okay. I can't say, all right, I just left the board. Hey, executive director, I'd love to come back and consult.
Correct.
With the information I gleaned from my time on the board for 60,000, that would be okay. I understand that.
So there is a way for a business to pursue. If you join, you become a partner in a consultancy firm.
Understood.
For that consultancy firm to pursue that
Got
contract,
it.
But you yourself would be prohibited from interacting for 1 year.
I just still want to get a little bit more clarification on that. It's the representation that's prohibited, not being a party to a business that can get a contract. Is that correct?
Correct. It's the representation. That's
but then
right.
I was confused, Doug, by the 1 year ban on contracts.
So
but,
you could, in the scenario that Dave brought up, that landscaping business could get a contract of any dollar amount, provided there are no other, you know, violations of the ethics code. But David could not represent in the negotiations over that contract.
For the first year.
For the first year, correct. Year.
And that's only if that the contract value is over 50,000. Is that?
Oh, no, that's separate. Oh, that's a separate provision. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's my point, is that there's a separate prohibition.
Yeah, that's a bullet.
Okay. Yeah, so one more ban. One-year ban.
Okay, I'm glad we clarified this. Yeah, we're talking about the first bullet under one-year bans, which deals strictly with respect to representation. And that can be on any contract of any value. Then we have a separate provision that deals with those 50,000.
But can you clarify, because before former agency, right? I mean, that I think there's a distinction there, right? Not doing work for the agency. That's representing others seeking approvals. So for example, you know, one of us could not go and get a contract with some coastal town and be their point of contact to help apply for a ship grant, but we could work for a company who gets a contract to work for the Port Authority.
Right, you can still share your knowledge with your new entity, but you just can't be the conduit between the new entity and the CPA.
Absolutely, so with respect to this first bullet under one-year bans representation, nothing prevents you behind the scenes with your new private employer or any other entity sharing your insights, again, assuming, provided you do not disclose any confidential information. Yeah. Sharing your insights on how to interact with the Port Authority to help that private business. But you yourself cannot be involved in that communication during that 1 year.
Okay, I think that clarifies, because the distinction I was looking at was a little bit different, because I get stuck on the before the former agency, and I'm not clear if that covers doing work for the former agency. So, like, the distinction in my mind being a consultant under contract for the Port Authority versus a consultant under contract for a town seeking funding for the Port Authority. Are you saying even working for a consultant who's working for the Port Authority, you still can't be the one?
There is a very, very narrow exception.
Okay.
And it's been long established under the former State Ethics Commission for public officials to work on an execution of an existing state contract and have that limited contact with their former agency if on strictly technical implementation of that contract. This frequently applies to highly technical, specialized fields, engineering fields. This is common with DOT engineers. For example, let's look at this overpass. Let's say DOT worked on this overpass, they executed the contract, and they're building it or refurbishing it. And you have a former engineer who worked on that case. He could work for an engineering firm on the execution of that state contract purely on technical matters because, again, it's to state's benefit to have state bridges.
Yeah.
He's intimately involved as a technical specialist or expert. And so under those circumstances, it's very narrowly applied exception because we want that knowledge base to be shared and so on. But again, in those cases, we ask folks to contact us for advice because it's more involved and it's very, very narrow in its application. The so-called technical implementation of an existing contract.
Can I just pursue that a little bit further? In the representation ban, again, on the 1 year ban, it's not limited to something like a contract or a financial interest. It's, for example, you go to work, you leave the Port Authority and you go to work for the Army Corps of Engineers, or you go to work for the EPA, and it's not just a municipality as well. It could be a federal agency. Right.
Yep.
And
yep.
And it could be about the impact of proposed legislation and your new employer's, you know, the EPA's view on a piece of environmental legislation. The way it's been explained to me before, that is also prohibited. And if it's a, whether it's a government or not is not relevant.
That's true. The representation, that's the first bullet of 1 year bans, that representation prohibition applies to governmental entities, to private entities. So if you're working now for the federal government, you would be precluded from interacting with your former, with the Port Authority here. You can interact with any other state agency, but Port Authority is the restricted former agency.
And the other 1 year ban is specifically, this is actually an employment ban, but on any entity that has a contract with the CPA that has been signed, that you were instrumental in the negotiation, supervised the, you know, assignment of that contract, you cannot for the first year go work for that contractor if the contract itself is worth more than $50,000.
Exactly. So, and it's a dual ban. The private entity cannot hire you if you were responsible for awarding, for negotiating that type of contract in excess of $50,000. And it's, again, a one-year ban.
Right. So for post-state employment, if upon leaving state service, you join a lobbying firm that engages in both legislative and executive branch lobbying, can you represent clients before the legislative committees immediately upon leaving state service? In this case, it's a yes. You, this is not the CPA. You can go in, even in front of energy and technology or transportation or any of those committees. It's perfectly fine for you to be there.
Even if your former colleagues from CPA are testifying before those committees, nothing prevents you from appearing in that context.
So a couple quick points over enforcement, just so that way... So the enforcement of the codes of ethics is initiated by a complaint either filed by a member of the public or by our ethics enforcement officer himself. When complaints are filed, we are very strict about confidentiality. We don't acknowledge to the media. We don't confirm that complaints have been filed while the investigation is ongoing. It's all completely confidential. Understanding that complaints against people and violating the codes of ethics is an incredible impact on your professional and personal reputation. We need to, our enforcement division will investigate once they are confident that there's a potential violation of the codes of ethics. They'll bring it before a judge trial referee and they will deem it whether there's reason to believe that this has happened. And at that point, the complaint would be put on a public meeting agenda with our board and they will adjudicate it in open session. And at that point, it becomes public. If the board finds that there has been a violation, then they will order the respondent to either comply with the code in the future, file any required reports or statements, and or pay a civil penalty of up to $10,000 per violation. This is not common, but when things do rise to this level, there's usually multiple violations, so the fines can rack up pretty quickly. So if there's anything that you need to convey to us, you can do it via anonymous phone conversations. You can request anonymity on the phone and are provided with that by providing anonymous tips. It allows the ethics enforcement officer to then be the person who files the complaint and gets the ball rolling. But you have a communication channel within your own agency and you obviously can contact us directly if you need to.
And just one note, sometimes, and this is common with public officials, they will call us telephonically and want to have that anonymous conversation. And subsequently, they can, if you want written documentation of a compliance advice that's been given to you, you can follow up by email, knowing very well that obviously once we paper this, any written communications are subject to freedom of information laws. But that initial phone call, you can have, anonymous conversation with our staff. Just make sure you tell them that I want to keep this confidential. But once it's papered, it's FOIable.
And at CPA, just as in every other state agency and quasi-public agency, the heads, the deputies, the persons in charge of procurement, contracting, and human resources are considered mandatory reporters, and they have a statutory obligation to alert us should they believe that there's been a violation of the ethics code. And that's it. So thank you for having us, and we're happy to answer questions or see you next year.
And you know where to find us.
Yes.
Or we'll call Fit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so that brings us to item number 10, which is old business. Any old business? Any new business? I'm trying to get to adjourn. I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Meeting is adjourned at 1404.